Chris Crump began his radio career in 1987 as a producer at ABC Cap Cities, WHYT-FM in Detroit. He went on to serve as a remote broadcast engineer, on-air talent, and then creative services director for Capital Broadcasting in Orlando. He moved to the manufacturing side of the business in 1996 and has served in sales capacities for Spectral, Euphonix, Symetrix, and Klotz Digital. Since 2004, he has been the Senior Director of Sales and Marketing for Comrex Corporation. Clearly a man with an affinity for companies that end in the letter X. Please welcome Chris Crump.
This is the clicker?
That's the clicker.
Okay, it's color-coded. Beautiful. Hey, it's really good to be back in Madison. Was I here last year? Does anyone remember? I don't think I was. Anyway, hey, good to see you all, and we're going to take you from the transmission side of the signal chain all the way back down to the studio, so you might need to readjust your thinking a little bit. We're going to talk about telephone audio on the air, which is the bane of my existence, something that I can't stand, and how we can improve it. So, moving forward, this is a garage door opener. Oh, there we go. Got it. Okay. Somebody's garage door has just opened, and they're really upset. So, the bane of my existence, cell phone audio on the air. Let me give you an example of why it's not quite so wonderful. I hope it's not just me. It makes my skin crawl when I hear audio like that on the air. And if you think about it, telephone calls have been a huge part of our on-air programming for decades. Think about it. I mean, radio is the original social network. People would call in. We're able to broadcast and talk to millions, or depending on the station, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. But this doesn't really help the programming cause. It really doesn't, because we want to be able to educate, inform, entertain the listener. Here's a personal example of why bad cell phone audio on the air drives me nuts. As a listener, I love AM radio. I drive around all over the country, and I turn on the AM radio wherever I'm at, because I think it has something to do with the fact that the cilia in my ear have deteriorated. I can't hear high-end and that loud, noisy FM music stuff. I just can't handle it. But AM voice, I can handle. And I like to listen to political talk. And I was listening to a nationally syndicated show, driving down the road, and a very well-known former Secretary of Defense was on there pitching his book. And I could tell he was in the back of a limo, and he had a cell phone like this, buried in his throat. And it sounded like this. I really wanted to hear what he had to say, but it was so annoying that I had to turn. It was awful. So what can we do to improve that situation? Well, now it works. Okay. I can't stand that. It's like the worst audio sample ever. Okay, so from the days of Bell, when the telephone has undergone huge leaps and bounds, we've made them easier to use, although it would be really cool if I had one of those in my office. That would be kind of neat. The technology has improved by leaps and bounds over the decades. Back phone, anybody still have one? Yeah, probably still have it, but it doesn't work because they turned the AM service off. Those actually sounded really good, and you could do some decent audio with those. Dynatac phone, anybody have a Dynatac phone? Yep, okay. Tim, of course you do. And then we have these smartphones. The crazy thing is, even though we have these $1,000 iPhone 8s, and they're like basically our exo-brain, it's our brain outside of our body, they have the ability to provide really high-quality audio for who's ever using it. The problem is, we haven't really harnessed that yet. collectively as the broadcast industry. So why do telephones sound so bad? Well, because the phone network was built by engineers. Oh, I know. So the specifications were really meant to provide intelligibility, simplicity, economy. And for this reason, only the absolute audio was absolutely required for this. They didn't say what kind of audio. It just had to be passable. So all the highs were filtered out due to bandwidth concerns. Lows were filtered out because of that 60-cycle hum that would present itself. And when telephone was digitized, all this was basically set in stone. Oh, I forgot to be passing. I was too busy reading my notes. Okay. So the digital phone system basically takes these 8-bit audio samples one after another. It does it 8,000 times per second. And then it lays these all end-to-end to create a 64 kilobit data channel. So you would think 64 kilobits, you should be able to do something with that. Well, the problem is you're dealing with a 8 kilohertz sampled audio for 8 kilohertz audio. And we know that it is an 8 kilohertz audio sample, and it shouldn't sound bad, but it does. Well, you can blame this guy. This guy, Harry Nyquist, who basically theorized that the network sample at 8 kilohertz can only pass 4 kilohertz of audio. But in practice, not in theory, it's more like 300 hertz to 3,000 hertz. So all of that lower audio quality is due to the filtering that we talked about just before. Typical phone call is really bandwidth limited, and it can make your ears bleed. So if we look at the entire range of human hearing, audio for the telephone actually encompasses a very small portion of that. So there's the telephone range right there. Especially when you consider the FM frequency response, the full range going up to 15 kilohertz, it's really kind of small. And then when you factor in mobile phones, the bandwidth that you get out of a mobile phone, it's even worse. So Donald Rumsfeld, you ruined that show for me. Anyway, moving on. So let's talk a little bit about audio encoders. We just covered the ubiquitous G.711 audio encoder, which is basically in the digital telephone network. But when you enter into the mobile world, you start to encounter encoders with compression to basically get G.711 experience, but with less bandwidth. So the first of these common encoders is something that we know as G.722. That's actually GSM and AMR wideband codecs are used in mobile phones. But the first wideband encoder was G.722, and we know that from ISDN, which gives you 7 kilohertz frequency response. And since then, we've graduated to some of the more modern encoders like MP3 and advanced audio coding, AAC. We've also moved into some other variants of AAC to improve audio quality and reduce bandwidth even further, like high-efficiency AAC, or AAC Plus, as it's known, and then AAC Enhanced Low Delay. Well, there's a new codec in town that I want to talk to you about, relatively new. Some of us have heard of it, and it's being put into broadcast audio codecs for remote delivery, and it's also being put into a wide variety of apps. It's called Opus. And its claim to fame isn't it that it's the best sounding, and it's not the lowest delay. It's really good in both of those departments, but the big deal is that it's absolutely free of patents, which makes it possible to be included in all kinds of applications. It's a hybrid encoder. It has a couple of different modes. It can be used for voice, and it can be used for speech, and it has the ability to auto-detect whatever mode that it needs to use. And it offers delays short enough to be able to use in a wide variety of, like, conferencing applications. And it's pretty versatile for both high bandwidth situations and low bandwidth situations on a network. And again, I forgot to click my little thing. Sorry that I just kind of rattled off. So moving on. I'll try to remember to use this. The thing is, I just feel like I'm opening the garage door. And my garage door is kind of slow. So I don't know. Okay. But it's still pretty cool. So we'll talk about some two very interesting developments that can reduce the amount of telephone sound on the air. The first is smartphone app, or a couple of smartphone apps we'll talk about that fit the bill. And the second is a way to use a web browser to actually improve the sound of telephone audio on the air, or the audio quality on the air. So smartphone apps are used a lot of times, especially on my home AM station, WSB in Atlanta. There's one reporter that refuses to use anything but a smartphone, or a telephone, or he probably has a flip phone, actually. And it drives me nuts. Because he reports live from wherever on a cell phone. I guess he thinks that sounds cool. I don't, personally, but I'm in the audio codec business, so what do you expect? So, you know, these things basically can be used with a wide variety of apps. They use the data channel on the phone to connect to a local cell tower, and then the tower will actually bridge that to the public internet, and then it would internetwork with a studio codec back in the station facility for broadcast. Lucy Live is a great example of this. It actually is a pro-grade option, meaning that you have to pay for it. It's anywhere from $30 to $300. It does offer some real support. It uses the high-efficiency AAC coding algorithm. There's also a version that offers AAC enhanced low delay. It's available on both iPhone and Android. The BBC has, I think, 3,000 of these that they give to their reporters. So it's pretty ubiquitous in the BBC. And we know this painfully because the BBC has a lot of our stuff, and we had to include interoperability with Lucy and a bunch of different modes specifically for them. Not a bad little app to use on a smartphone. And is there a reverse on this?
Yes, the yellow button.
The yellow button, because it's not labeled. Okay, there we go. Let's see, did I forget anything? Okay, anyway, Lucy is a nice option. Moving on. So there is also a bunch of free apps that are referred to as SIP apps. And you can actually just Google SIP apps and you can find no less than 3,562, I think, is the existing number. Really nice because you can do peer-to-peer with these SIP apps. Basically, you're using SIP. It's a pretty common protocol that's used in your VoIP telephones. It's based on internet standards, and it's very flexible. It's expandable, and like I said, there is no shortage of them available for free. And it's also SIP, Session Initialization Protocol, is the basis of the interoperability standard for IP audio codecs. I'm painfully aware of that because I sat in a bunch of very boring meetings in Amsterdam where they talked about 8-bit header information and which control protocol. Anyway, the EBU actually sponsored this thing called NASIP, which is the Network Group Audio Contribution over IP, and they developed the TEC 3326 standard. Sounds really impressive, doesn't it, for a sales guy to be able to utter all that stuff. But basically, it just is a way for devices to speak to one another, most commonly in G.722, and there are a bunch of other audio coding modes that are compatible. But SIP can be used in these smartphone apps, and there are plenty of them that are non-pro grade. They're available for iPhone and Android, even for Windows 10 and OS X and other platforms. They're free, typically. Actively maintained, meaning that there's somebody that's actually updating the device as new device, updating the firmware as new devices or the app as new devices become available. And they can use that low band, that low delay wideband audio codec known as Opus. Well, the one that we like is something called LinPhone. It's a free app. It's basically made available by Belladonna Communications in France. And you can get it right now on the App Store or on the, the Google Play Store or the App Store. And we're going to push the garage door opener, and we'll basically give you an idea of what they sound like. So first, this is the typical skin-crawling mobile phone call to a radio station.
Hello, this is Julia. I'm calling on a normal mobile phone.
And this is a LinPhone call.
Hello, this is Julia. I'm calling on a smartphone app.
I think Julia sounds much better on LinPhone. You might agree, you might not. But for broadcast, I think that's really nice because imagine instead of someone like Donald Rumsfeld calling in on a cell phone, he could actually have that app on his phone and call in and actually sound like he's in the studio. I think that's a huge improvement for the product that you're trying to get out to your listeners. So that's apps. We're going to talk to our second new high-quality option, and that's using common web browsers. And as you know, browser developers are always adding all kinds of features to their products, and the most recent development is something called WebRTC. Now, when I say recent, that's all relative, because WebRTC is a consortium that was put together by Google 6 years ago, also by Zeif, who was the open source community around the Mozilla Firefox browser. And WebRT is pretty interesting, mainly because it's got Google's money behind it, and mainly because it's using the Opus algorithm. So you probably know Skype and FaceTime. Some of you might even use Skype and FaceTime on the air. But the challenge is that those are all closed environments. They're not open source. You just can't open up a web browser and connect to it. You have to install, you have to own a Mac to use FaceTime, or you have to download Skype onto your device to use Skype. And also the fact that it's a Microsoft product might turn some people off, but they are usable for broadcast standards. But unlike Skype and FaceTime, WebRTC is open source. And there are plenty of, do you want me to smile? I don't smile very well. Okay. So there is a huge community of third-party development in the WebRTC arena. Plenty of companies like Patent, Sangoma, Audio Codes, Cisco, Avaya. There's just a huge multi-billion dollar community that is implementing WebRTC solutions into their communications infrastructure all the time. So what is WebRTC? What is WebRTC? It stands for Web Real-Time Communications. It's got a voice engine in it, and it has a video engine in it, and it also has a communications layer in it. So it's basically designed for video conferencing. It's based on open standards, and basically what you have in a web browser like Mozilla Firefox, Google Chrome, Microsoft Edge, Opera, soon to be Safari, is you have G.722 and Opus coding algorithms built into the browser. So when you download it onto your machine, you basically have a wideband audio codec on your machine. It also has video coding algorithms, H.264 and VP8, already in the browser. So basically, you have a high-end video encoder already on your PC. So the other part of that equation is it's got a JavaScript layer. That basically handles all the connections. And there's also a server that's involved to basically make it all happen. So there's a lot happening in it. We talked about what browsers are supported, and Safari has announced. Also, iOS 11 support was announced at the Worldwide Developers Conference in August. And supposedly, it's in iOS 11 now, but it's not fully implemented yet. So that means that there are more updates to iOS 11 before we can actually take advantage of WebRTC on an iPhone. But the nice thing for us is it uses our friend the Opus coding algorithm, so it gives you that killer combination of high quality and low delay and free. So three good things in a web browser. So that means that anybody that has a web browser on a smartphone or on a PC or on a Mac has the ability to call into a studio and do high-quality audio for free. But is anything really free? No. Okay. So how does a WebRTC connection work? Well, it was really designed to take advantage of basically internet, internet marketing or internet commerce, so that a person shopping at home can interact with somebody at Amazon to talk about the thing they're about ready to purchase or about a return. So in this case, let's say we've got Jill over here on her computer, and she's going to, first of all, wake up RTC, WebRTC in her system. And she does that by going to a WebRTC server. And there are plenty of servers. We'll talk about those in a second. The second thing that happens is WebRTC actually sends Jill a link back to her computer. And that link is something that she's going to send to somebody. In this case, she's going to send it over to Jack. And then when Jack gets that link, he's going to click on it, and it's going to connect to the WebRTC server. The WebRTC server is going to send a little line of JavaScript back to Jack's computer that's going to wake up the audio codec or the video codec functions in his web browser. Once that's done, the server is actually going to initiate the connection between those two endpoints and basically allow for that audio and video to pass between those two computers, so it's a peer-to-peer link at that point. So pretty much, it's a transparent process for the user, except for having to deal with that interaction with the server. So you need to have a WebRTC server in order to make all this happen, and there's a bunch of ways you can do that. You can basically build your own. You can go to webrtc.org, find out all the information you need on how to build a server. If you're adept at Arduino or Raspberry Pi or some of those little tiny PC things, you can actually build a little tiny WebRTC application and create your own. But there's also plenty of other third-party services like Airtime, which is formerly VLine, Source Connect Now, IPDTL. There's bunches and bunches of them out there. All you have to do is Google it or Bing it or ask Alexa to find a bunch of WebRTC servers for you. And these are some that will come up. And of course, this presentation is going to be available for you, so all these links are active and you can go look at them if you'd like. So, what does a WebRTC call sound like? Thanks to our handy-dandy clicker, we're going to just give you an example. So, first of all...
Hello, this is Tony. I'm calling on a normal mobile phone.
And that's Tony in support, and he has a really good voice, but you wouldn't be able to tell because that was a normal mobile phone.
Hello, this is Tony. I'm calling via WebRTC.
And that's beautiful because now you can hear his glossy, mellifluous tones, and it's a beautiful thing. So, WebRTC calls... using a web browser, pretty impressive. So let's say you want to use it in a broadcast studio environment. Obviously, you have to have something sitting in the studio, and you don't necessarily want to have a big computer with a noisy fan or even a little computer with a little tiny noisy fan or any kind of computer because it's just another computer in the studio. So what if you want to have a broadcast-facing interface? Well, it has to be capable of taking VoIP calls, of course. It needs to be able to bridge to the public switch telephone network. Needs to be able to take wideband SIP calls from apps like the Opus apps that we talked about, or even from Lucy Live. Needs to be able to take calls from WebRTC as well. Okay, this is a little bit self-serving. So we have this product called Stack VIP, and I'm not going to bore you a lot with it, but it's a basically VoIP telephone talk show system that's capable of doing all those things. Now, you can use WebRTC in this, and we have a really nifty paper that takes you through all the steps. I think there are 36, and it's really frustrating, but it can be done. And you're going to use a free service called GetOnSIP that's going to act as your WebRTC server. Works great as long as you have the patience to set it up, and you can send the link to the guest. They can click on it, and magically, if all your settings are correct, it'll pop in there, and it'll work, and it'll sound beautiful. And the Donald Rumsfeld problem is no more, in theory. So, to be clear, Stack doesn't necessarily support all this, but we'll just give you a quick example of how it works again. Not unlike with Jack and Jill in that example. Basically, you're going to set it up with a server. You're going to send that link to the guest. The guest is going to click on that. It's going to talk to the WebRTC server. The JavaScript is going to wake up the audio components in his web browser, and then it's going to make that call. Between the two. So with our Stack VIP, you have to have a WebRTC or kind of SIP bridging service. And again, you can build your own. You can use something called IPDTL, which is for a monthly fee. They actually do all the back-end SIP stuff for you, the WebRTC stuff for you. There's also a company out of the UK that has something called Call Me FM. Again, it's a monthly fee. They do all that back-end WebRTC server for you. And then GetOnSIP is another one that provides that WebRTC bridging service as well. Okay, again, a little bit self-serving, I know, but this is all in the for the purpose of education. So one of the things we realized that is that you guys are very busy. You don't necessarily have time to sit there and go through 36 steps to program in WebRTC into a phone system. or an audio codec or whatever. So we decided that we would take what we knew about WebRTC and put it into one product to make it a lot easier for you. And so we created something called the Opal IP Audio Gateway. And in effect, we're cutting out the middleman because you no longer have to worry about that third-party server. Now, maybe you have a lot of free time and you want to spend 40 hours of your free time on the weekend implementing all this. I'm not saying it's going to take 40 hours, but for the example. So we cut out the middleman, and in effect, we're going to give you a device that kind of it reduces the delay, provides SSL security, eliminates your need for having to install something like Skype on the client end, and it's supported by some free apps and common web browsers, and it's a beautiful thing. So in the example where we talked about using WebRTC in that third-party server, we're just going to use the international verboten symbol on that and get rid of all that and basically make a peer-to-peer connection, because essentially the WebRTC application server is that little box up there called Opal. So it's actually living on that box. So as long as you give that a static IP address, you give it a domain that references that static IP address so it can do all the DNS lookup, all your work is essentially done. Because then at that point, you go into the back end, you create an invitation, it creates a link for a guest, you email or text it to them, they click on it, it talks to the Opal box, which is your WebRTC server, it wakes up the audio portion of the web browser that they're using, whether it's Microsoft Edge, Mozilla Firefox, Google Chrome, Opera, Safari, and it basically makes that peer-to-peer connection, and it's doing all the work. It also provides a SSL security layer as well, and that's one of the things that makes WebRTC unique. You could, of course, use a free SIP app and make a peer-to-peer connection that's basically unprotected, and it's making the best effort, but all the secret sauce that's in WebRTC, things like dynamic jitter buffer management, the ability to throttle the encoder, some error protection and concealment techniques are all activated and connected with that JavaScript layer and with SSL certificates. And in the background, we use a little application called, open source SSL certificate exchange thing called Let's Encrypt. And you can find out about Let's Encrypt if you really, really want to know at letsencrypt.org. I have to admit, it's really boring. But it's interesting. So essentially, Let's Encrypt, as soon as it connects, it's actually going to exchange some certificates from the Opal to the client that's requesting, and it exchanges those certificates so that the client browser can connect, and it's also going to encrypt the audio. So that's another layer of security, which is pretty cool. Everybody loves Skype. I really don't like Skype. I have a story about Skype, but I'm not going to bore you with it now. You can come by the booth and I'll tell it to you. It really kind of makes me angry, but I can explain later. So one of the biggest challenges is if you, let's say you're a public radio station and you want to have a guest on, and you have a Luddite guest that doesn't necessarily understand what Skype is, you can spend a couple hours on the phone, get it installed on their computer, and then they have to you have to send a request, they have to accept it, and you have to go through that whole dance to get them to be able to connect via Skype. Once it's in the directory, I mean, it's pretty easy. You click on it and you connect, as long as the internet is good. But we want to kind of eliminate that, because as long as you have a common web browser on your smartphone or on your PC, that's all you need. You've got the codec. You don't need Skype. You don't need FaceTime. And there are plenty of web browsers that support it. As I mentioned, Opera, Microsoft Edge, Firefox, Chrome, and Safari. And then we have two free apps for both the iPhone and the Android available on the App Store and on the Google Play Store. One of the things that's really neat is, let's say somebody goes to, they click on that link and they don't have one of the commonly supported web browsers that has WebRTC in it, it'll actually take them to the store to download that on their phone. It's a beautiful thing indeed. It just makes it a lot easier. And it's a pretty quick and it's a pretty light application. So it's not 54 megabits. It's actually, I think, 13 megabits, so it installs pretty quick. Okay, I haven't practiced this. This may or may not work, so we're taking a real big chance. So I've got an Opal installed in my studio in Atlanta, and I created an invite, and it's really hard to see, and I apologize for that. It's really hard to see. But basically, it's an encrypted and customized link for that caller. So let's say I want Coach Spurrier to appear on my show. I can actually go in, identify his name, and it's going to give him a link that's unique to him. I can send it to Coach Spurrier, and as long as his assistant or his wife hands him a phone, he can click on the link, and it'll open up whatever browser is supported on his device. So, as a long-suffering fan of AM radio, and long-suffering because I have to listen to really bad cell phones on the air, I think it's time for us to improve the audio quality of callers on the air. Please. And Opus offers a new way to integrate it. We've given you a bunch of different examples of how you can use Opus and other technologies to improve the call quality on your programs. New free apps for mobile applications. And WebRTC is really huge. And believe me, if you haven't seen WebRTC, if you haven't heard about it, you will be hearing about it relatively soon, because it's really already starting to change the way that we're communicating on the face of the planet Earth, and it will continue. Mainly because Google will own all of our brains eventually, and we'll all be WebRTC connected. But seriously, it's a liberating technology. It's pretty revolutionary, and it's really going to change, I believe it's going to change broadcast in the not-too-distant future. So there's a Opus codec primer. There's a link. Again, you can download this from wherever they're going to squirrel these presentations away. Really interesting paper on the Opus codec. We have that really long, drawn-out, multi-step process of how to integrate WebRTC on your Access or BrickLink or Stack VIP. There's a link there for it. And also, there's a WebRTC primer that we've created if you want to know more about it. Thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Good morning. Two quick questions. I noticed on the back of the Opal, I saw a NIC for the internet. Do you have an AXIA output, or is it just analog?
Nothing that I can discuss at this point.
Okay. Second question is, have you had anybody embed that link, a general link, say on their Facebook page or on their mystation.com page to say, oh, you can call in now, just click on that link and have it used for a call-in type thing like that?
In all fairness, no, we have not, because it just shipped yesterday. It's a brand new product. So unless someone's really, really fast and they can actually get that link operational before FedEx shows up, I'm going to say no. Going back to AXIA Link, Wheatnet Link, as you can see, Comrex has always been about open standards, and AES-67 is interesting to us if you just want to replace a XLR connector. The thing that's more interesting to us is AES-70 that offers control and presence. So I think as we get a little bit closer to the completion of the fully defined AES-67, you'll see some further developments from us, because we want to be able to talk to everybody, not just a certain closed environment.
Hi. Two quick questions. After you establish the link with the client and they exchange certificates, when the session is done, then the client, what if they, does that certificate continue to live on their laptop, or do they just have to go in and get rid of it?
It does. You have the ability to either disable or revoke that link, because if it's somebody that you never want on your radio station again, gone. Or it can be evergreen. Basically, you have a management list, so you have all those links.
Okay.
So if the coach is always going to be on, it could stay on forever.
Okay. And then how do we answer the question that we get? Let's say if we want to put this into our plant because we want our audio to sound better over the air with these callers, et cetera, et cetera. How do I answer the question with the management? Well, how do I monetize this? Why is it good for us other than sounding better?
Well, to me, and again, it's a lot of it's subjective, but in my opinion, I mean, if I'm going to have, I live in Atlanta, and again, I have to endure listening to Matt Ryan every Tuesday at 11:30 on his crappy cell phone. and I can't listen to it. I'm sure there are other people like me, so I think that it's an improvement of the product. You know, there's always going to be some enterprising local sales manager that says, hey, let's sell this feature. Kind of like Mike and Mike do. They've got the Subway, Fast and Fresh hotline or whatever, and it's usually in high quality audio, and they sell that. So if I was a salesperson, I'd find a way to monetize it by making it a gimmick. And then once it becomes a gimmick, it becomes less of a gimmick, and it becomes a nom de rigueur.
So if you send your link to your remote host, they click on it, they get connected, everything is happy. 10 minutes down the road, someone calls them on their cell phone. Do they get kicked off of that link then? How does that work?
It takes priority. So it basically takes priority of the audio bus.
Even if it's just in a general web browser situation, or only if you're using that app?
Even if you're using the web browser, because basically it's taking control of the sound function of that device. And one of the things you do, and I don't have the web browser up to show you, but you actually select what microphone input and headphone output you're going to use, and it gives you the option to do that. So once you've done that, it's basically going to block out anything from taking over.
Because I know I've used Linphone in the past, and it did not do that. So
there is a setting.
There's a setting. Hey. Shows you what I know.
Oh, one more question. Oh, sorry, one more.
So cell phone audio is compressed to reduce bandwidth, and the amount of compression was set so that you could tell who was talking with you instead of, like, for example, there's a robot calling you, and you can't tell who it is. You can't recognize the voice. And that was done at an earlier time, probably with 2G. But now, more bandwidth is available, and you're taking advantage of it with WebRTC. What is the bit rate? And does adding highs and lows improve the intelligibility or just the pleasantness of listening to it?
Okay, so this could take a while. Okay, I got to go back to my 2G history here. So the Opus coding algorithm is actually pretty adaptive. So it can go all the way down to 5 kilobits up to 512 kilobits per second, and it's adaptive in between. By default, when it creates a session, it's going to use 48 kilobit Opus for giving you 15 kilohertz audio, so 20 hertz to 15 kilohertz. So full frequency response. Now, if you go back to the days of mobile communication, you weren't really listening to a human voice. It was actually being vocoded. It was using some pseudo-noise encoding and basically cramming 8 voice conversations on a single data channel. So it was actually an approximation of the human voice, not actually the human voice. So I would consider this a more humanized version that is easier for the brain to comprehend, and it's less fatiguing than having to listen. Because all those parts of the human voice that we're used to hearing just talking to us from mouth to ear, that's what our brain is used to over our course of evolution. But when you break all those voice components apart, you vocode them and synthesize them, our brain has to work harder. It creates listener fatigue. So I would think that the argument for making it less fatiguing for the listener so that they can listen longer, maybe build your cume, increase your ratings, I'd be all for that. Hopefully that answered the question. Okay, I think I'm done there. They've got the hook.
Whew. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much.